This revolution will soon complete its first year since the moment it was launched as a peaceful and popular revolution of the youth with one demand. Peaceful change and the pursuit of free and dignified life in a democratic and civil state governed by the rule of law. This state will be built on the ruins of the rule of a repressive, militarized, corrupt and backward family police rule, which has consistently brought Yemen to the edge of failure and collapse during the last 33 years. Our peaceful and popular youth revolution is not isolated or cut off from the revolutions of the Arab Spring. However, with all regret and sadness, I should note that it did not get the international understanding, support or attention of the other revolutions in the region. This should haunt the world's conscience because it challenges the very idea of fairness and justice. Distinguished ladies and gentlemen, I would like to emphasize that the Arab Spring revolutions have emerged with the purpose of meeting the needs of the people of the region for a state of citizenship and the rule of law. They have emerged as an expression of people's dissatisfaction with the state of corruption, nepotism, and bribery. These revolutions were ignited by young men and women who were yearning for freedom and dignity. They know that their revolutions pass through four stages which can't be bypassed: toppling the dictator and his family, toppling his security and military services and his nepotism networks, establishing the institutions of the transitional state, and moving towards constitutional legitimacy and establishing the modern civil and democratic state. Thus, the revolutions of the Arab Spring will continue through the efforts of youth who are ready and prepared to launch each stage and to fully achieve its objectives. Today, the world should be ready and prepared to support the young Arab Spring in all stages of its struggle for freedom and dignity. The civilized world should, immediately after the outbreak of the revolutions, commence the detention and freezing of the assets of the figures of this regime and its security and military officials. In fact, this is not enough, since these people should be brought to justice before the International Criminal Court. There should be no immunity for killers who rob the food of the people. The democratic world, which has told us a lot about the virtues of democracy and good governance, should not be indifferent to what is happening in Yemen and Syria, and happened before in Tunisia, Egypt and Libya, and happens in every Arab and non-Arab country aspiring for freedom. All of that is just hard labor during the birth of democracy, which requires support and assistance, not fear and caution.
Yemeni activist Tawakkul Karman, the first Arab woman to win the Nobel Peace Prize, as well as its youngest winner to date, a 32-year-old mother of three, an outspoken journalist and activist. Tomorrow we will play her concluding remarks, the speech she gave on Saturday, December 10, 2011, International Human Rights Day in Oslo, Norway. And that does it for our broadcast. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Aaron Mate, Nermeen Sheikh, Steve Martinez, Sam Alkoff, Hani Massoud, Robbie Karen, Ryan Devereaux, Dina Guzder, Manal Khan, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Nogueira, engineer. Special thanks to Julie Crosby, Becca Staley, Nick Gilla, John Hamilton, Dennis Moynihan, Jessel Noor, Jessica Lee, Vesta Gadars. Our website is democracynow.org. You can watch, listen to, and read us on Facebook. You can tweet us. We are People's Radio and Television. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hi, I'm Bob Longman with your WUSB Concert Billboard for Tuesday, December 13th. Eileen Ivers with An Irish Christmas at Bolton Center in Bayshore, New York at 8 p.m. The On Your Radar series continues at the Living Room in Manhattan with Nick Rail, The Whispering Trees, and Christopher Brown. That's at 7 p.m. Your concert billboard for Wednesday, December 14th. The National will be at the Beacon Theater in Manhattan at 8 p.m. Buddy Merriam will be at the Mirabel Tavern at Three Village Inn in Stony Brook at 8 p.m. Eileen Iris will be at the Bolton Center again in Bayshore at 8 p.m. My Morning Jacket will be at Madison Square Garden in Manhattan at 7:30 p.m. Your WUSB concert billboard for Thursday, December 15th. Jesse Haynes' Holiday Party and Open Mic will be at the Vail Levitt Music Hall in Riverhead, New York at 7:30 p.m. The National will be at the Beacon Theater in Manhattan at 8 p.m. Bobby Bear Jr. will be at the Dray Horse Tavern in Bayport, New York at 8 p.m. The Debbie Miller will be at Rockwood Music Hall in Manhattan at 8 p.m.
This has been today's Concert Billboard. Tune in each day to hear where your favorites are playing, or maybe try something different. The online Concert Billboard at WUSB.FM has schedules for months ahead. And look for WUSB Concert Billboard Group on Facebook for any last-minute shows. The WUSB Concert Billboard is a service of WUSB Stony Brook, 90.1 FM.
Very good evening, everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Manuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday night. Sorry, the CD player's not working. The microphone's not working. Nothing's working. That's why we're not doing live radio, except for this couple of minutes here, because we just wanted to introduce the taped feature that we'll be on tonight. Actually, we have Kyle joining us live from Seattle.
Hi.
I'm not sure you're working either.
I'm not working.
I don't think you're coming over the board. This is unbelievable. Nothing is working in this place. What else is new? Maybe people can... If I move the phone over here, let's try that. Okay. I'm so sorry, everybody. Kyle, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right. Yeah, it's not coming over the board, but it's coming over the phone. I have the phone next to the microphone. We only have a couple of minutes because we're introing a program that we recorded last January, I believe. Do you remember this, Kyle? We were in Switzerland.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that trip. We had just left Berlin from the Congress, I believe, right?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah, and we chose to go to Switzerland, and we visited Liechtenstein and just explored in a place that I'd heard a lot about. I really wanted to go there. It was very wintry, you know. We had been to all these cold places, so it seemed fitting.
It was wintry, but it wasn't snowy. There wasn't snow on the ground, but it was cold.
Right, right.
But the piece we're going to do tonight, last week, I don't know if you remember what we did last week, but basically we aired the brief parts where we were in phone booths listening to the music, and they played music in Swiss phone booths for some reason.
Awesome. That was really fun.
Yeah, it was fun. But we played mostly Swiss radio last week because it was an abbreviated show, and we had a couple of journeys to pay phones. Tonight is much longer. Tonight we're actually speaking with a friend of ours from Zurich, and we're standing right near the place that we stayed, which really was an incredible place. I think you picked it out, but it was right next to these train tracks, and I love seeing trains go by, and right out our window we could watch trains all day and all night. I didn't get to see the city at all. I stayed, just watched the trains going by, but they were able to drag me outside for a little bit so I could do this interview with this friend of ours in Zurich. It was an interesting time, don't you think?
Yeah, it was fun. That was a very busy corridor there, and it was on the sort of upside of the hill of the town, and we just watched and talked with our friend. He had showed us around a bit, and he had also been at the same event we had gone to in Germany, and he also took us to Revamp It, which was a hackerspace there, and showed us a great time. And so it's a really interesting conversation we had while the trains are whizzing by.
Yeah, really cool. So our friend Maxim will be joining us in just a moment as we journey back to January of this year under the many trains going by in Zurich, Switzerland. And next week we have, I believe, a French show. Remember, we went to Paris after that, so we did some radio as far as I remember. Yes, that's what we're going to do. We'll do a show from there next week. So, Kyle, it's great hearing from you. Unfortunately, we can only speak to you for a couple of minutes as it's a very tight program tonight.
I understand that, and I hope everyone out there in Long Island is doing well. And, I'll sit back and listen with you.
Okay, yes. Let's hope and pray that this CD player works better than all the other ones. Enjoy. And we're still here in Zurich. Say hi, Kyle.
Hi.
We're actually a bit outside the city, standing here with our friend Maxim.
How are you?
Maxim is from Switzerland. You came from Basel, right?
Yes, originally I was born in Basel, and I probably moved to Zurich about 15 years ago.
Very cool. We've been wandering around this city for the last few days. Yeah, actually, we're right underneath the flight path of Zurich Airport. There's a lot of industry around us. There's electrical substation, airports, various other things. And, there's also a bunch of train tracks here. The train's just passing now. It looks like a bullet train. Is that the kind of train that is?
Actually, it looked like a German ICE train.
Looked like it, but it said S-whatever. Switzerland has all these three-letter acronyms for trains.
SBB, which is... Schweizerische Bahn. I don't know. Sorry.
Well, it's interesting because we're at this very strange sort of industrial area behind the hotel we're staying at, and I'm in heaven because the window from our hotel looks out over all these train tracks, and I like watching trains go by. Literally, a train will go by every few minutes, and boy, you people have a lot of trains. I mean. Wow, we were on a train last night going into Zurich, and it was full of people. And I can't think of anywhere in the United States where at that hour going into a city would be so full, and it was only one train of many. What are people doing when they travel on trains? Are they just always going back and forth?
Well, you can travel pretty much anywhere with the train. So, you know, if you want to travel up to the mountains, go for skiing, you can take a train. You can travel to the city, go out drinking. You can, you know, there's like no place I can think of where you cannot take public transportation here.
Yeah, it does seem that way. The train's going every which direction. And Switzerland is a relatively small country, but you've got us beat on that. You might even have the Germans beat, because not only do you have a really extensive train network, but it just is so well integrated, even down to the tram level. Now, Kyle, when we got into the city, we didn't know what we were doing. We didn't know where we were going, but we almost instantly were able to figure it out based on the ease of the tram system.
Yeah. Yeah, we weren't sure we were going to be getting onto the tram because we didn't have adequate tickets. I think we only had enough change for one ticket. And then I found a machine that took credit cards and also would accept bills. That was down into the bottom of the station. But once we got that, we started looking at the maps and figured how to get one tram to the next tram. And that tram took us to the front of the place where we're staying. And we've just continued to use it in the same way. And it's really cool because in the tram, they'll predict destinations, they'll predict at which stops what trains are going to be available, and they'll predict how soon you're going to be at the next stop. And
those aren't predictions, though. Those are facts.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, they got it down to a science here. They'll say, okay, the next stop is this particular station, and the number 14 tram will connect there in 3 minutes, followed by the number 7 tram in 4 minutes. I don't know how they do it.
They actually use GPS and cell phone technology to transmit that data back and forth, so the trams always know where they're at. And the signs you see at the tram stops, they actually know when the tram's coming. So even if, like, for some reason they're running late, which hardly ever happens, but even if they're running late, they will show you how late it is and how much more minutes you got to wait until it comes.
That's unreal, because we have GPS, you know? I don't know why we can't do things like this.
Yeah, we have displays, too, and very often they're wrong.
Yeah, they lie. They say something's... they say a train is going to be here in 3 minutes, 2 minutes, and it just gets erased, and they start over again. It's, if they even have that at all, it's really pretty incredible. But that's, you know, that's one thing. That's one part of the whole Swiss way of life, the efficiency.
Yeah, that's sort of emblematic of a lot of the ways they tie things together here in Switzerland. A great example would be language. There's German, there's French, there's a lot of English.
That kind of train is what? Is that an S-Bahn?
That's an S-train, yes.
And that's just a suburban rail?
Yeah, exactly. And they have, like, in urban areas, they got S-trains. Like, here in Zurich, we have a lot of S-trains that, you know, go, like, up to 50 kilometers outside of Zurich.
And that's a double-decker train with an engine. Is that a diesel engine, Kyle? Behind it?
No, that was an electric one with overhead wire.
Nice. Okay, so that's two trains we've seen so far. Two trains.
They also have Swiss-German... which is actually what I heard. We talked a little bit about is more like what you said, Basel German and Zurich German.
There's a lot of different dialects, and especially in the German speaking part, depending on whether you come from Bern or Basel or St. Gall or Zurich. People.
I'm sorry, another train is passing by now. I just have to announce the trains. Now that what kind of train looks like a more traditional long distance train.
Yeah, that looks like a train that just travels between cities in Switzerland. Yeah, absolutely. Like an inner city express or something. Or
and looking at them going by the hotel window, they're always filled with people, no matter what direction they're going in. I look in the rush hour, and just as many seem to be going into the city as away from the city, so that's incredible. I'm sorry, I continue with the language discussion.
So, yeah, so like there's the different cities, they speak their own dialect, so people, like when I talk my
terribly
Swiss,
sorry to interrupt yet again, but there's another train going by. This one looks like another S-Bahn trip on a different track in a totally different direction, and that's going rather slowly. It's only going about 40 miles an hour, I'd say.
Because I think right back there's a stop for it, so that's why it's probably slowing down. Yeah,
okay. And as you can see, almost every seat is filled with people. There's a pretty good crowd there. And so quiet, too. Your trains, I was marveling at this the other day, how incredibly soft they are. You don't even hear them moving sometimes.
I think they spend a lot of money on, quieting down that technology. Absolutely.
We need to do that. Again, I'm sorry. Hopefully that'll be the last train for a while. we're not trying to make a point here as to how many trains they have in this country. It just happened to work out that way. So every town seems to have their own variation of the language.
Right, so you can immediately tell where somebody grew up. I mean, usually your language doesn't change anymore, so my language is the Basel dialect. And
terribly sorry, but here's another train. This one looks like... Is that a long-distance train or another S-Bahn?
I think that looks like an inter-regio train, which is inter-regions, and this probably goes like up to 100 kilometers as well. Okay. So I think they use like the same lines as the S-trains, but they don't stop at every stop.
I honestly don't think it's possible for another train to go by because they'd be too close on the tracks, and it might be a little unsafe. So I think we have some time to actually discuss the language. Now, you can tell where somebody is from. Just can you give us an example of maybe the words, how something might be different? It's different from German,
yeah.
Right away. I even can tell that. But you can tell the actual part of Switzerland someone's from.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm just trying to think of a word that would sound a lot different in the different dialects.
Yeah, it's tough being put on the spot, I realize. But... well, it's strange because...
Yeah, you can say... So, for example, I can say, ich gang auf Basel, which means I'm going to Basel. And then somebody else would say... that was a bad example. I should use second person. Gosch auf Basel.
What were you thinking?
I'm totally confused now with the English as well. It just screws me up. And hold on. Give me another minute.
just a minute. Hold on. Here's another train. This is another S-Bahn going on the other track there, heading outward. Very long, these trains, too. Look, it's got an engine in the middle, and then it's like a totally different type of car. That was weird. I never saw that. Oh, look, there's another train going the other direction, passing by at the same time. I'm blown away by this. It's really, you know, I could stand on the Northeast Corridor, which is the busiest train section, I think, in the States, and I wouldn't see as many trains in 6 hours, I don't think. It's pretty amazing. So
I can't think of a word, but it's like small nuances that just make it up in the pronunciation and the way they say the words, and then you hear it. And then there's also French and Italian and Romanche, right? And Romanche is like a really small language that is almost, it's kind of a shame, it's almost a dying language they speak in the mountains in Graubünden. And they have like special programs now in school, though, so that the children still continue to speak that language so it doesn't die out.
Oh, interesting. I thought that language had to do with the Roma, but it's totally different?
Yeah, it is different, yeah.
And again, here's another train. This is, looks like another S-Bahn heading out on a different track. Again, filled with people. Can you read where it's going? All the trains have destinations printed on the side of them.
Yeah, this one is going to Niederweningen.
Okay. Is that far?
No, it's probably like 20 kilometers north.
Incredible. And of course, in the streets, we mentioned the tram system is very extensive and buses everywhere. It's just very easy to get around. So this country is, we've noticed it's rather, people conform a lot. There are a lot of rules, a lot of things you can't do. For instance, on Sunday, you're not allowed to hang your laundry outside. You're not allowed to garden. You're not allowed to wash your car. Is that kind of thing unusual? Is that, you get used to that?
Well, you do, right? I wouldn't say that everybody obeys to all the rules, right? Usually
they get turned into the police if they don't.
I haven't heard of anybody like getting thrown into jail for hanging his laundry out or something.
And we have another train coming by. I was getting a little worried there. What's this? This looks like another bullet train heading in the other direction. And look, it's one of those double bullet trains. See, they have two of them facing each other.
A German ICE train again, right?
They do look that way, but I've yet to see a German ICE train pass by here. I think that's a Swiss train. And they can separate. They can separate in the middle and go to two different destinations at some point. All right, I'm a little upset we haven't seen a freight train go by, but I guess we've only been out here about 10 minutes. Wow. We were talking about rules and regulations and things.
Oh, right. Yeah. So if you live like, for example, if you live in an apartment complex, right, and like there's like one washing machine for the complex, and like there's a plan of when every apartment gets to wash, what day of the week, and Sundays you can't wash, or you shouldn't wash, let's just say it like that. I mean,
if you can't wash your own clothes?
Right. On Sunday, Sunday's Sunday, and Sunday everything's closed.
Here comes another train. This looks like another long-distance train.
Looks like an Interregio again.
Again, full of people.
Before. Yeah, it is full of people. Well, you know, it is...
Sky car in the back
there. Yeah, it's got the panorama car in the back, which is nice.
Very nice. You mean you can't run a washing machine on a Sunday? Someone's going to get upset if you do that.
If it's in the common area, then yeah, you can't do it you shouldn't do it on a Sunday. I mean, there's always exceptions to the rules. So, you know, people understand, like, if you're a family and your kid just, you know, peed in bed or something, then you do your laundry, right? I mean,
is there a paper to file to get an exception for that?
Yeah, no, fortunately there's not, right? I mean, yeah, I mean, common sense still applies. I mean, there are rules, but, you know, at the end of the day, common sense does apply.
I hear there is a lot of paperwork, though.
Yeah, there is, but you know what? I've been to the States, and I had to fill out a lot of paperwork for my visas and stuff, so I think every government has their good amount of paperwork everywhere, so...
Now, Maxim, you lived in Connecticut for a while, yeah. So what are your impressions of the States based on that?
Well, I think it's a great country. I mean, to travel, it's fantastic. you know, and you can tell it's probably a lot easier to travel in the U.S. than it is here, just because things
You're
are...
You're kidding, right? I mean, saw 50,000 trains go
all right,
by.
All right, so, yeah, public transport obviously doesn't work. But if you got a rental car or something, it's just, you know, everything's a lot cheaper and easier to get around. Here, I think if you... If you travel with the public transport, I agree, it's a lot better here, but it's also a lot more expensive. Some of the other impressions, I mean, I think I enjoyed it. I thought it was a great area to live. You know, you can go up north, you can go ski, you can go down south, hang at the beach in Florida, you can go out west, desert. It's a great country.
Huge country. I mean, those are thousands of miles apart, though, those places you described. So it takes time. Did you drive around a lot or fly?
I did, actually. In 2004, I spent 2 months just driving from east to west, and it was great. It was fantastic. And it's just every time you started to deal with administration and DMV and I don't know what, that's when it got painful, right? But, I think every country has those sides as well.
It's been about 3 minutes since we've seen a train. I'm frankly getting a little worried. Do you think something's gone wrong? This is very unusual. In this country, if things are late by even a minute, people get upset. I'm not exaggerating, right? Like the trams, for instance.
There's clocks everywhere, too. It's actually really helpful. You get the sense that people do keep time. And I think Switzerland is actually known for watches.
Yeah, I think that's one of their core exports, right? There are a lot of fine watches, but also like the cheaper ones that get exported all over the world.
And so this then translates into people's sense of punctuality and stuff. There's a sort of an expectation that you're to be on time. And we understand that if you're too early, that's bad. And being late is unheard of.
that's probably right.
Of course, we were technically late meeting you earlier because, well, there was misunderstanding as to where we should be exactly. That's an airplane. That's not a train. Oh, wait, I think I hear a train coming. Yes, there is a train coming from somewhere.
There's also,
oh, there it is.
There's also a human coming. We need to step to the side.
Human
here.
Coming. There are very many of those, but that was a what?
That was an S train again. Yeah.
Okay. Again, the equivalent of a suburban train going by. I'm sorry, what was the last thing?
We were late.
Oh, yeah, we were late meeting you. Well, actually, we were outside, you were inside. So, but while you were inside, were you simply thinking these Americans, they just cannot be anywhere on time?
Well, you know, yeah, I got used to that, right? I mean, I think the further out west you go,
this could be the freight train I was waiting for. Hold on. Yeah, that looks like a freight train. There we go. Look at that. That's a thing of beauty. Can't tell what they're... What do you think is in there, Kyle?
Cargo.
Well, it says cargo on the side, true.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But it could be anything. It's covered. Covered boxcars. All right. That's our first freight train. We understand that the punctuality issue. And, of course, with all the different... Is that another damn train? This is getting ridiculous. Yeah, here's another train over here. That sounds like another freight train. It's a second freight train.
Freight train again.
Unbelievable. And that's got oil.
What?
That's got like oil things, right? The oil cars.
Oh, the cars.
Yeah, the cars.
Yeah, they're oil. They're tankers.
This is Tam oil, and Tam oil is actually from Libya.
You're saying this train came from Libya?
No, but it's just they do business with Libya here.
Wow, we don't get to do that back home. So this is what happens when you do business with Libya. You get lots of freight trains going through. Look at that. That's a long one. Where else can you hear the sound of freight trains going by on the radio? That's the last car. I had my back turned to the other track, so I probably missed a few trains while I was watching the freight train. But, wow, it's getting to the point of absurdity almost. Timeliness is a very important thing. Cleanliness is another important thing. And bells. You hear the bells? What is it with the Swiss and church bells? They're always going off.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have any relation to any church, so I really cannot comment that much on it. But yeah, they do like their bells signaling the time pretty much all day. Every 15 minutes, actually. And like every full hour, it would ring the amount of hours that's on the clock.
There's another train. I can barely see that one. That's using that middle track. I don't think we've seen that one being used yet. Looks like another long-distance train. Okay, that's gone.
That's true.
And a plane going over us at the same time. Yeah, but the bells, they ring constantly, calling people to prayer, I guess. I heard this. Tell me if this is true. I heard that depending on your religion, you're expected to pay a certain tax. I think Catholics pay a certain amount. Protestants pay another amount. Atheists don't pay anything at all, right?
Yeah, that's exactly true, yeah.
It's a good system. I like that system. So you subscribe to a religion, and you pay for that, and I guess that's sort of your passageway into heaven or something, that you're paying this extra amount of money.
Well, yeah, I mean, you pay for the pastor who holds the morning mass or whatever. I mean, he needs to live somehow as well, right? So, and also the church itself, there's maintenance needed for it.
You should pass the hat in the States. Do they not do that here?
I don't know. Like I said, I don't go to church, so...
Yeah. Well, we'll have to go inside one and see what they actually do.
Each church in the States is usually responsible for their own funds, and you know sometimes they have a larger parish or diocese for the region, and you know in the case of Catholicism that goes all the way up to Rome and the Vatican. But the churches themselves are independently responsible to raise money, and other faiths. I mean, they obviously don't have the Vatican or something, but they have like regional representation, you know, maybe a little bit looser, but they're still independently responsible for their own monies and whatnot. And yeah, that's sort of different to have it just organized right in the taxing or right in the laws of government. I mean, that would be, that people would be up in arms, right? You know, church and state, no separation, all of that. But sounds like they just sort of take care of it here and, you know, get it right out of the way. So it's up front, you know. So
here people don't seem to object to paying taxes nearly as much as people do in the States. And it's weird, too, because this is by no means a socialist-oriented state at all. It's very conservative. But you guys occasionally, well, first of all, you vote for things about every 3 months, right? There's elections of various sorts.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And it's, you know, it's almost to the point where they're, because the participation is not that good at the elections. And, you know, people think that, you know, that's because there's so many of them, you know, that people aren't going out to vote on things anymore. So like the last time, I believe the average usually is around 30% of people voting, right?
And as this other train is passing us by, and again on the middle track, which is, seems to be the most popular track to be used now, looks like another S-Bahn train. Am I right identifying that?
Yeah, that does look like a S train. You can always see it at the end. It's got the sign on the top. And actually, no, that one looked like a Regio, almost like a long-distance train.
I see. What was I saying? Religion,
taxes.
Yeah, so you guys actually voted for tax increases. People voted for tax increases,
yeah,
so that you would not have any sort of a debt. Is that correct?
Exactly. Last year we had a vote to increase the VAT, the value add tax, and it got accepted. And the additional funds are going to be used for, I believe, for the kind of like the Social Security fund. So yeah, and it, VAT was raised actually this January 1st. It just got into effect. It went from 7.6 to 8%, which is, you know, still a reasonable rate compared to other European countries.
There's also a bit of fear of change of different cultures, particularly with regard to Muslims. And there's another train. It looks like, what's that, another S-Bahn or regional?
It looks like a S-Bahn, yes.
Okay, heading into Zurich. I recall Switzerland being one of the countries that banned the building of minarets. And I was looking at the percentage. There's another train. I didn't see that one before. That's just a single locomotive. He lost the rest of his train. He's going to find it somewhere. Muslims make up about, I think, 2, maybe 3% of the entire population, and minarets have been banned. This strikes me as kind of a disproportionate reaction to something. Is that disturbing to you?
No, yeah, it kind of is. I mean, there is this party here that uses, I call it bar politics, right? It's like the kind of stuff that people talk about in the bar. That gets people angry, and they build on that, and they're pretty successful in doing that. So the thing about the minarets was definitely one thing, and more recently an initiative was accepted to deport foreigners like a criminal. So that was another one of those initiatives. I mean, and the thing with kind of gets me is that, like, especially the thing with criminal foreigners, that we already had laws around that. If somebody comes to Switzerland just to become a criminal, then you can already deport them, so there's no need to have like a specific law for that. The minaret thing, I think they just built on the fear of the Muslims taking over the world.
Yeah, which pretty popular fear these days.
It is, but, you know, with 2%, they got a long way to go.
And I think you have a total of about 2 minarets in the country to start with.
Exactly, and, yeah, so.
Oh, that sounds a lot like the immigration stuff that's going on in the States, and also I know that's going on in Holland. It's pretty big, deporting people that are foreign.
But having lived in the States and also here, there's a lot of jobs that people here, they don't want to do, and that's where you know, people from Eastern Europe come in, and they do a good job, right? And, yeah, well, if they do become criminal, then, you know, it was in the law before that they had to leave. I mean, now they just made it more explicit. They were worried about people coming in and using welfare and misusing that, and, you know, so like that they can throw them out easier, I guess. But I think it was unnecessary.
Interesting parallel to hacking, of all things, in that... if a hacker commits a crime, there's already a word for it. There's already a word for certain types of crimes. You don't need to say the person was a hacker, and that in itself means that they were a criminal. Just like saying somebody is a foreigner doesn't mean they're a criminal, but it's implied. And the fear factor is injected into the people. And it's just interesting how you already have the system in place to deal with criminals, whether they be hackers or foreigners or whatever. There's no need to get people all in a tizzy about this sort of thing, and I think it's just a way of gaining power through fear.
Yeah, and introducing additional laws that I don't think are necessary.
Yeah.
And creating homogeneity.
Yeah. Over to economics, we've noticed, Kyle and I have been traveling through Scandinavia and through Germany into Switzerland. We've, of course, noticed the disparity in prices, how things are so much more expensive in the Scandinavian countries and here in Switzerland as well. As another train approaches, what we got there? That's an S-Bahn,
right?
S-Train,
yeah. S-Train. Buy some furniture at home, and